While your lineup of conversational marketing playbooks that you implement can be a strategic decision, there's a huge amount of tactical choices that can go into each one. How far do you stretch your brand voice? How many choices should you offer in your playbook? Not to mention, how do you measure your success? Making sure you're getting the most of your conversational marketing can hinge on a lot of these choices. So before today's episode, Wesley and I sat down to list out the options and considerations that should be top of mind as you start rolling out your chatbots. I'm Guido Bartolacci, and this is the Adding Value Podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Adding Value Podcast. This is episode 3 in our series all about conversational marketing. So if you haven't listened to part 1 and 2, go back and do that first. Today, I want to go over our best tips and advice for actually building out playbooks with conversational marketing. We've already talked about the different types of playbooks and how you can use conversational marketing, but for this episode, we've actually prepared a list of all the things that we think are important tips or what we would call best practices for if you're starting out with conversational marketing or if you're just optimizing your efforts that already exist. So we are literally going to read down this list and discuss each one as we go. So Guido, let's dive in. So you've chosen a platform, whether that's Drift or HubSpot's chat feature for your conversational marketing, and you sit down and you know what playbook you want to create and you go to write your first message. What should you consider when you're writing that first message that's ultimately going to grab the attention of the people on your site, that little bubble in the corner? What should it say? What tips do you have around that first message?
It's a really good question. The first thing to say is it depends on what page you're talking about putting that chatbot or that playbook on. People on different site pages are going to have different types of intent, and understanding what that intent looks like and what you want a user to do when they're on that page is important first. So what a lot of people will default to when they're building a playbook for the first time is just having a bot that says, hey, welcome to the website. Is there anything I can do to help? Which is not the worst thing to do, but honestly, if you think about it, there's a huge missed opportunity there for a large percentage of your visitors. Most people coming to your website, especially if it's your homepage, they're coming there for a particular reason. They need help with something. They probably know who you are if they're going straight to your homepage. So you can assume a few things about their behavior, what they're like, and why they might be stopping by. And taking that into consideration is a great way to think about starting your bot off. So what I'd recommend doing for most people when they're building that first bot is think about the pain points and the challenges that your company can help solve for and weave that into the initial message that your bot shows. So in New Breed's case, one of the things that we do as a company is we help companies increase the amount of visitors that they're getting, the amount of leads that they're converting, and we help them generate demand. So we might use one of those as a way to help welcome people to the website and say, hey, are you looking to generate more traffic to your website? Like, I'm here to help. And have that be a way to do it. But to answer the question, it's really about understanding that intent behind that visitor coming to the site to begin with.
Right. And I think the other thing is people, it's easy, like when I draft them, I often want to be like, hey, and give that like fluffy. But the truth is like, you don't want it to be a massive paragraph. You don't want it to take up the whole screen. The idea is to be like concise, clear, have it pop up in the bottom corner. And you want to take that time to really, like you said, address what they need and don't give the fluff, right? Like skip the cutesy message, just like use the words that are going to trigger them to open mm-hmm. it and so that they interact with the bots, because that's your chance to get them to open the bot to begin with. And if they don't open it, mm-hmm. you're not going to get them to convert anyway.
And two other things on that point is, one, there's definitely a spectrum. Like, you want to get to the point, but you also don't want that point to be like, hey, do you want to book a meeting with our sales team? Like, it can't be that direct. Right. But there's a healthy balance, a healthy spectrum to try to land on there. The other thing to mention too, though, is there's definitely a time and a place for that welcome message bot that's just, hey, is there anything that I can help you find? And a good place to think about using a bot like that is on some sort of listing page where you have a lot of different items to choose from. So on our blog listing page, that's a pretty decent opportunity to be able to say something like, hey, can I help you find a particular blog post? Or if they're on our case studies page, hey, are you looking for a particular type of case study? Where it's more of just, I'm trying to help you find the thing that you're looking for a little bit faster.
Right, which the pain point on that page typically would be that they're looking, like on our site, at a massive list of case studies and they don't know which one to choose. Or they're exactly. going to our blog and there's a ton of articles and tags and all that and they're like, I don't know what to find. They may go to the bot and be like, okay, I have this problem, help me find this quickly, which serves exactly. their pain point.
which it basically hammers home the point that it's better to start from that perspective of like, why is this visitor here? Because you might arrive at a welcome bot or a hey, how can I help you bot being the correct answer to that question. But you might also arrive at a conclusion that's we need to hammer home at a pain point that's not quite as clear. And asking that question up front can help you get to those answers.
Right. And honestly, it's kind of like I'm thinking through this as I say it, but the more targeted and specific, if you're opening the bot to everyone, if you're not really targeting like a specific person and you don't know who these visitors are, the more targeted or specific the page is, the more targeted or specific that message typically can be, because it means that there's one like course of action for the page. Like if it's a pricing page, you know what they're there for. If you're on your homepage or the blog, that's a really open general page and you can't give some crazy targeted message to that.
Exactly. It's a great point. I agree with that 100%.
The other thing that's kind of funny that we even have to discuss this, but it's so true and it happens, is emojis. And we debate this a lot. And we talked about brand and chat actually last episode. So we do cover this a bit, but we didn't talk about emojis. And we have this discussion a lot. And this all comes down to like what your brand is and what your voice and tone are and who you want to be seen as. If you're a really formal brand and you use, you know, formal language and you want to keep that vibe to your customers, then you might not want to use emojis because they're a little bit too fun. I don't know if that's the word. They can be a little kind of cutesy and they're funny and sarcastic. And we use emojis, but we use them. I would say we're kind of like a halfway point. We don't overuse them. We're very cautious about that. But there are times, especially with chat and conversational marketing, that emojis can be great because they show a little bit more personality. They make the user be like, hey, this isn't aggressive. You know, it's friendly. It's easy. I'm going to open the chat, right?
Mm-hmm. It can definitely present an opportunity to sound or come off as more human than you would with just text. So there's absolutely a place for emojis. But like you said, the biggest question to ask yourself is like, the biggest two questions are, what does our brand voice and tone sound like? Is there room for emojis within that brand voice and tone? If it is very professional, you might want to avoid it. But if you have an audience that uses emojis, even if that doesn't necessarily align directly with your brand tone and voice, it might be something that forces you to consider whether or not it's time to start incorporating stuff like that. Especially as you're reaching out to potentially younger audiences that are more used to using emojis in their regular language, their regular interactions with other people. If that is your audience, or if they might be your audience, it's worth considering weaving that into the equation. I would say, again, there's a balance there. You don't want to overuse them either way. You can come off really unprofessional if you just flood a message with a ton of emojis in it, but throwing in one or two here or there can be a really effective way to be a bit more engaging than you would be otherwise.
Right. And then the last two pieces of that welcome or that initial attention grabbing, which we've talked about these a bit too, but they're the character, the image that you use, which Drift has a lot of automated. It's literally a robot that you can kind of customize and add hats to or get seasonal with. I don't think that plays a huge part. I think this is something that I find really interesting that I really like. To me, your bot's name and the bot's image, I want them to very easily convey that it is a bot, because I think as marketers, we know the difference between a live chat where I'm opening up and it's a human saying, hey, and a bot. But especially in certain industries like the manufacturing industry, for instance, like your audience may not realize, which sounds silly, but I'm sure it happens, that it's not a person and that they can't just open chat, or like setting expectations for that experience from the right off the get-go is important. And I think by naming it, like ours is RevBot, because it's for revenue bot. So like clearly state that it is a bot so that you know the experience you're going to have before you have it. And I think that's kind of a really good tip to add in there as well.
Yeah, I really like that suggestion. I would never suggest being misleading with anything that you're creating on your website. And this is a great place to remind everyone of that. Setting the right expectations, letting people understand that they are interacting with a bot, not a human, is really important. The other thing that I think is really interesting from a psychology perspective on this point is that I can't remember who the company was I was talking to about this, but they were doing some testing on their website and they had both live chat and bots available for people to speak with. And they actually found that there was way higher engagement when people could tell that it was a bot up front versus knowing that it was a human being. Because if you think about the traditional buying experience now, people don't want to be sold to. They want to do as much information gathering as they possibly can before deciding to engage with sales. So if you add that bot as basically a layer between the visitor or that prospect and a sales rep, the person that's coming to that site is a little bit more willing to engage with the bot because they know they're not going to be starting that sales conversation right away, and they're still just doing a little bit more of that information gathering. So having a bot, like we're talking about, like what the bot should be named and what it should be looked like, but just having a bot in general can be a great way to increase the amount of engagement that you're getting from people coming to your site, and making it very clear is just a great way to hammer that home.
Right. It's like, it's a little less invasive, I think. If you're jumping on live chat, right, you know that someone's going to be like, hey, what do you need? Can I route you here? You know, real aggressive, where it's like, it's all about who's in control. The user is then exploring on their own terms when it's a bot, because they can leave the conversation and there's not someone sitting on the other side.
Mm-hmm. And you can always make the option available first, like one of the first messages that pops up to say, hey, do you want to speak to a human right away? And that way someone can just click a button and they're immediately live with a person if that's what they want. But forcing them into that up front might be a bit of a jarring experience.
Right. Okay, so we've got your welcome message down. We've got some tips there. Let's switch gears. So generally speaking, across your whole bot and building experience, what do you think about the length of your messages and like how many to send at once? Because you could either send, I've seen bots where they send a whole paragraph at once with all your options, mm-hmm. or, you know, what I like to tend to is I send more like condensed, smaller messages. I also text messages this way, so maybe this is just me, but to send more condensed, shorter messages so that it's more scannable and readable as they pop up.
Right. I think that's the right approach to take, honestly, to do short, punchy messages, short, punchy content. It'll be a little bit more effective because, like you mentioned, that's what people are more used to when they're having that type of interaction with another person. So I always recommend going that route. I mean, like, if you think about it, whenever you get a text message from someone that's like a whole page long, you're like, your initial thought is something is terribly wrong right now. Like, why do they need to send this much at once? Something went wrong. So if you have shorter messages, it can be a way to be a little bit more relatable, a little bit more approachable. So definitely keep it tight. I also don't recommend sending, like, I try to keep it to like maybe two or three messages in a row.
Right.
You just don't want to overwhelm the person. And if you find that you need to say that much at once, then there's probably something wrong to begin with. You will probably just want to have some sort of engagement that happens where there's a back and forth with the person that you're talking to before just saying everything that you need to at once. One tip for that is if you find that you want to send like five messages in a row, what you can do is stop yourself at three and have that third message be a question that just leads into the next thing that you would say either way. So like the person just has an opportunity to just say like, yeah, like that makes sense, or something along those lines, something simple where they just click a response, have the opportunity to engage, and then you just keep going with the conversation.
Right. You want to almost keep, I mean, that chat window is small. You almost want to keep it clean. Like because if you build up that whole chat, one, they're probably going to miss something. And two, they're going to be like, whoa, this is too much effort. So like you said, make them engage in the middle and then you can keep going. That way it kind of clears the chat bubbles up so that you're not looking at a ton of text at once. The other thing that goes along with that is links. And I think I struggle with this. We just talked about this. I've decided to do away with link previews because I will oftentimes when I'm offering like, hey, have you checked out this guide or do you want to see this resource? I just will hyperlink that text, which I love that because then you don't get that crappy, you don't have the whole link showing up in the text and it slims down text. But also, I know Drift, I think typically automatically will populate those link previews, which takes up a huge amount of the real estate of that chat in the corner. And mm-hmm. I decided to turn those off because I think at this point, it's safe to assume most people understand that when text is a different color, you can click it.
Yeah.
So I like that because it keeps it much more clean rather than like text and then this huge bubble of a link preview where it's popping up with an image. Like, I don't want those in there. I want to keep it as clean as possible.
Yeah, I think that makes a ton of sense. And the only thing I would add to that is if your main call to action is to get someone to click on a link, then maybe put in a link preview.
Yeah.
But if it's going to push the text that is being used to send that link out up out of the view that they can see the messages in, so that all that they can see is the link preview, then I'd almost always recommend not to do it. But I completely agree with that. The idea is to get someone to engage through the bot. And if the link that you're sending out is like muddying that up and making it harder to see, and just basically getting in the way of the messages that you're sending, like, don't do it. Just get rid of the link previews.
Right. So what about, okay, so what's your general rule for questions? I think I already know the answer to this, but yes or no questions are always a no, because what's the point? They're going to say no, yes, and then what do you do, right?
Right. Never want to ask yes or no questions. So basically, like, think about it in these terms. By providing a no answer or a no option as an answer, you're giving someone an easy way out. And on top of that, if the answer is no, then they're just not going to respond. So why even bother? It's way better to have like a yes and type of approach. So what I mean by that is you say like, hey, do you want to schedule a demo, for example? You don't say yes or no. You say yes or maybe can you tell me more first? So you're providing that like additional option, that and option. So that way someone can continue to engage with it. If they don't want to, if they're not interested in it, they'll just stop responding, which is fine. That will happen. You should expect that to happen sometimes, or actually more often than not. But at the end of the day, like there's just no value being added by having that no option in there.
Right. The easiest example of this is on our blog subscription bot. It's on our blog page and it literally says basically some form of, do you want to subscribe to our newsletter? And the first option is absolutely. I think actually says, heck yeah. And the second option says, maybe tell me more, because I'm assuming that if they're, like you said, the no option is that they're going to close the chat, and that's cool. They don't want to subscribe. That's fine. But yeah. I want them to say, yes, I'm in, or I want my chance to explain to them why they should buy into whatever I'm trying to get them to sign up for, you know, engage in, because it's valuable for them.
Exactly. Again, we talked about missed opportunities before, not allowing to convey the value of whatever it is that you're trying to get someone, or the action that you're trying to get someone to take, is a missed opportunity. Again, you need to think about all of the ways in which you could convince someone that this is the right thing to do. And the people that don't want to do it will just stop engaging. And again, that's totally fine.
So next on our list is something that I don't think there is a clear answer to this. I think it depends a lot, and we still have this discussion a lot, and that's when should you route your conversations to a human? What are the rules for being online? And when should you use a calendar link? So first I want to say calendar links are amazing. We're kind of taking the approach right now at New Breed that if we're routing to a sales team member, we typically will use a calendar link, even if we are online, because we actually have a BDR team, and the BDR that works there right now is very, very on top of, we use Drift, and he's very good at monitoring that. And I can rely on him he's online. If he's working, he's online on chat. So typically we will use, if someone says, I want to speak to sales, I would much rather them get a message from the bot that says, okay, hey, why don't you book a time on, you know, X person's calendar that works for you, because it lets them make sure that they're free, because typically that conversation is going to be a longer conversation anyway. And then it also gives the sales person time to like prep for that and make sure that that's something that, you know, they're also free for and are ready for. What do you think about that? What are your rules around that?
Yeah, that's, those are all really good points to add. And from my perspective, the way I think about it is that you really need to make this decision on a business by business use case. Because at the end of the day, like you mentioned, the team that's manning the bot is going to be one of the most critical aspects of the decision that you make. If you don't have people that are either accustomed to having chat conversations with your visitors or don't have the time to do it, then go with a meetings link. Like, don't force people to change, like your sales team that is, to change their behavior and start chatting with people on your website if they're not prepared for that in some way. So start with a meetings link in that case. If you have a bunch of people on your team, though, that are ready and available to have chat or to have a conversation with someone on your website, then I don't think it's a bad idea to throw that into the mix and to have that as an option that's earlier on in the process, where someone can choose to speak to a human right away. And honestly, sometimes it's better to have a marketer or someone that's a little bit further up the funnel, so to speak, than having a sales rep be that person that engages with those site visitors. But it's really about the manpower behind it. The other thing that's important to keep in mind is like both intent and qualification. So you don't want to send someone to sales if they're not ready for a sales conversation. So they need to have the right intent behind it. And you also don't want to send someone to sales if they're not the type of prospect that's worth having a sales conversation with. Because if they're a low fit lead and sales wouldn't want to book a meeting with them anyway, then don't route them to sales. Like, you're just wasting their time in that case. So right. It's important to take those things into consideration as well. But the last thing that I wanted to mention on that is one of the ways that you can also weave both of them into the equation at the same time is you initially allow someone to book a meeting on a sales rep or a BDR's calendar, especially if that's the main thing that you need to have happen next. And you also provide an option to speak with sales immediately after they book that meeting so that they can ask any clarifying questions that they want to ahead of time. And one other piece that actually just came to mind is it's important to also think about how deep of a conversation they need to have with sales. Like if you can get just, if you have a very frictionless sales process, let's say, and it's easy for someone to just sign up on their own, then you probably don't need that person to book a 30-minute meeting on a sales rep's calendar. So in that case, don't use a meetings link, just bring a sales rep into the equation so that they can answer a handful of quick questions before someone signs up. If the opposite is true and you have a more complex sales process that needs a little bit more handholding, then maybe lean into that book a meeting side of things where someone won't be able to get all of their questions answered during that chat conversation that they're having with a BDR.
Right. I think most importantly, like, regardless of what you decide and like what your team looks like, if you have a BDR, which is someone that can do more of that qualifying and stay on top of being online, because that's their job, is to seek out leads and qualify people a little more than maybe like your, you know, your senior sales rep or whoever they may be dealing with later. The number one rule is do not ever say you will route someone to a human and have your reps either not answer or not be online when something goes through. So like we just did this, but my rule of thumb is we were doing some shifting on our team and whatnot. And I said, you know what, for now, I would rather them just book a meeting and have that experience and know that it's going to go well than risk someone saying, you know, hey, I want to speak to someone. And the worst thing is that they're messaging and no one's answering because it looks like we're online, but either we're not active or no one's paying attention. Like that is, that is the worst user experience, especially at that moment. Cause if you've got someone on your bot saying, hey, I want to speak to somebody and no one's there, that's not good.
Yeah. You just lost that person.
Exactly. Okay. So what's next on our list? Should you close conversations or leave them open? So at the end of a conversation, or I guess maybe we could back this up even bigger. When do you end a conversation? A lot of this will depend on your playbook, what the goal or like, you know, the ultimate thing you wanted that person to accomplish with the bot is. We said don't give any no's, which you won't, but there will be instances where you kind of receive that same sentiment if you've asked them, you know, four or five questions and they've kind of said no to everything. And then usually my line is, okay, well, you know, it looks like you're good here. Let me know if you need something. Do you auto close those? Do you leave them open? And how do you, you know, make it so that people can re-engage if they decide to?
Yeah, it's an interesting feature that's available in Drift that when people first see it, I think gets a little bit confusing. It's like, should I close or keep this conversation open? The best explanation that I've heard and that I like to use for that is think about a regular conversation you're having with a human being. There's a point in time in which that conversation that you're having is over. The end of this podcast will be the end of this conversation. It doesn't mean that you and I won't talk ever again. It just means that this conversation is done at this point. So closing a conversation is basically like when that interaction is just over at that point. So in the case that you just mentioned, if they basically have demonstrated that they're all set right now and they don't need any more help, close the conversation out. There's no reason to try to keep that open. If there's a playbook that you're running that's intended to get someone to book a meeting and they do that action and they schedule time with a sales rep's calendar, that's also a time where you can, if there's no other questions that they have or nothing else that you need to send them afterward, that's also a time where you can close a conversation. There's no reason to just keep one open for the sake of it. The only time that I would do that is if someone says like, hey, if there's like a really important information in there that they need to get back to at some point, like maybe consider keeping it open. But there doesn't need to be a crazy amount of overthought when it comes to closing out conversations.
And when they open that back up, it's still there. So that, by instance, I was just thinking as you were speaking was what if you provide a bunch of links or like three links and you're like, here's the resources that might be valuable to you. The chat is still there. So even if it closes to get out of their way because they've interacted with something, when they click the button in the bottom right corner, it's still there. And those links are still there and they know that, right? Like that's natural behavior that it's still going to be there.
Right. That's what people expect when they go to most of their applications now, especially messaging applications. So and Drift is set up in a way to actually mirror a lot of other messaging applications that people are used to using, like Slack and text messages. So people expect that it's not going to be really jarring to see that their conversation history is there. And it means that it's a lot easier to manage your conversations that way, too.
Right. So this last one on our list, I'm definitely going to let you take the reins on because this is your specialty. How do you measure the success of bots and how often should you optimize? Like, how do you know if they're working? How do you know if you should change things? What's a measure for success?
So there's a few different ways to go about this. I'll start with the high level view, which is that bots are basically intended to get people to A, engage with them, and then B, to start a sales conversation, whether that's either booking a meeting or getting routed to sales. So being able to measure those two rates at a high level, like across all playbooks, is one of the first things you're probably going to want to take a look at. So the rate at which a chat is shown versus the amount that people click through to it is essentially that engagement rate. And then from the people who engage with it, the people that end up taking that highest value action that they can through the playbook, which is normally going to be to book a meeting, is the second piece that you want to look at. That being said, as we've discussed on previous episodes, not every bot is going to be intended to book a meeting. But the reason that you need to keep that book a meeting metric in place is because if you are investing in conversational marketing, you are going to want to look for ROI from the strategy and the tools that you're using. And booking meetings and generating pipeline from those conversations is going to be one of the most tangible ways to be able to measure that. So it's important to look at it from a high level. That being said, though, once you get down to an individual playbook, you might have one that's not intended to get someone to book a meeting. And in that case, you want to think about what the goal of that playbook is. And you can actually have goals set up within playbooks to be able to measure that directly. So if the goal is to get someone to click on a link or to go to a landing page or to do something other than book a meeting, then on a playbook by playbook basis, it's important to measure whether or not the people that initially engaged with that playbook ended up reaching the goal. And when you see that there's a low amount of people that are reaching that endpoint, then it's about going back up the playbook and finding where those drop-off points occur. At which point did a question get asked that someone did not respond to? At which point did someone select a response that was not the ideal response that we'd want? That's going to be indications that you need to change certain aspects of that playbook, whether it's the way in which you ask the question, the way in which you have responses posed, or the pages that that playbook shows up on to begin with.
That's a really good point to point out, because that's something we haven't talked about yet, actually, is that drift on the reporting side of things. They do show it's I would call it a flow chart, I guess, which I love using. So mm-hmm. like it shows you every time you update the playbook, it actually updates the flow chart and you can keep all of them. So it will show a stack of all the flow charts of all the updates you've made to the book so far. And it shows you the number of people who clicked on each message and the number of people that dropped off at every single stage, which is how you do what you just were saying, which you can go back and pick apart at what point did this really take a big drop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important to keep all of that stuff in mind as you're going through, because without going back and taking a look at the performance of an individual playbook, there's definitely an opportunity that, or definitely a possibility that you'll miss out on some future engagements that you could have had with people, or like some goals that would have been missed otherwise. So going back and optimizing and evaluating the performance of each playbook, I think is really important to do.
For sure. And like they should be updated over time, which is like a general, just like everything, like your offers are going to change. What you want people to do on pages is going to change. Your website's going to change. Like you can't just build these things and leave them hang out forever and mm-hmm. think that they're going to do the same thing.
And one other thing to actually to touch on with this area is like, if you think about the typical conversion rate on a website, it's around like 2% or so. So that means 2% of your visitors are going to turn into leads. If you apply that same idea to your chatbot strategy, then you could assume that like 2% of your visitors might engage with the playbook. I don't know if that number is going to be completely accurate, but let's assume that that's the case. That means that if you want to get any kind of like decent sample size to make an informed decision about how to optimize a playbook, it's important to put that playbook on pages that are highly trafficked, especially when you're first getting started, because otherwise you're not going to be able to make any informed decisions going forward. And if you put a playbook on a page that might be high valued but is never really seen by people, you're not going to learn anything from that. So if you want to like start to really amplify your strategy and find ways to improve it quickly, then it's worth putting it on pages that are more highly trafficked than others.
Right. That's a good point. Okay, so that puts us at the end of our list of all the things that we wanted to share. Do you have anything else you want to add or any last pieces before we wrap up?
The only other thing I would throw in there is that I think conversational marketing is a really interesting emergent strategy, and I'd recommend that most companies try it out. I think that there's a place for it in pretty much any business model at this point. You're going to see different things that are effective for one company versus another. So just keep that in mind as you get started. But I think every company can find ways in which to leverage conversational marketing to help accelerate their pipeline and grow the business.
Right.
And as always, if you like what you hear, please rate and review us wherever you listen to podcasts. It really helps us reach a wider audience.
If you can't wait until next week, you can visit us at newbreedmarketing.com, where you'll find plenty of blogs, videos, and more content about marketing, sales, and customer experience. And until then, see you next time.